A tragic death has just occurred.
Looks like a case of just too many gold chains.
This plane is definitely crashing!
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Pierre Spray, who is a veteran high-tech defense weapons and systems designer, as well as a highly regarded producer of avant-garde jazz and other genre recordings. Pierre Spray was the primary designer of two Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet. He left the Pentagon in 1986 and went on to found Maple Shade Records. Welcome to Background Briefing, Pierre Spray.
Hello, Ian.
And the F-22 fighter has obviously been a long-standing scandal, but 60 Minutes did a piece with it on Sunday where they interviewed two of the pilots who had risked their careers to go public and tell it like it is. The Air Force has since not punished them because a congressman was giving them protection under the whistleblower statute. 60 Minutes also talked to you, didn't they, Pierre?
They did.
And what was the basis of the conversation?
They wanted some backup facts on how the oxygen generating system worked, and I provided them with a bunch of statistics on the rate of incidence of physiological problems, pilots presumably oxygen or oxygen-related.
In other words, the hypoxia, which is the symptoms that the pilots have been experiencing, but it's apparently worse than that. Ground mechanics are getting sick that work on the F-22 as well. So that suggests that there's more to this problem than even the 60 Minutes piece revealed.
The 60 Minutes pilots were the ones who really kind of opened the door by being quite frank about the extent of the problems. And basically, the way they describe the problems, these are not primarily oxygen problems. One way or another, the pilots are being made sick by something in the airplane. This is not to say that there aren't also oxygen system problems. An oxygen system failure actually killed Captain Haney in Alaska, and that was the cause of the grounding of the F-22 fleet. But the rate of overall problems, disorientation, loss of control of the pilots is much, much higher than just oxygen problems alone. There are similar oxygen problems in the Navy's F-18, and they're running at a rate perhaps as low as 1/20th of the F-22 rate. This is an unprecedented rate for pilots to experience symptoms of confusion, disorientation, inability to fly, and so on. And it became very clear from what the two pilots on 60 Minutes were saying that they were describing symptoms that are persistent. This isn't just, you have inadequate oxygen and your brain doesn't function too well, and after you get on the ground and get a little breather, you're okay. They were talking about more than half the pilots having persistent cough and apparently very similar problems with the ground maintenance guys. It's almost surely an indicator that something else noxious and poisonous, some kind of fumes in the airplane, either fumes from the engine or fumes from materials in the airplane, are literally poisoning these pilots. Now, the sad thing is that in the face of all this evidence, the airplane has been ungrounded. That is, it was very properly grounded after the death of Captain Haney. It was grounded for almost 5 months. And all of a sudden, the Air Force decided to put the airplane back in the air without having the slightest notion of what the problem was. They convened a major panel of scientific experts. The experts came up with no smoking gun, still had no idea of what was causing the problem. And the Air Force turned around and forced these pilots to fly the airplane again. That's what led to the 60 Minutes piece and the two pilots saying they didn't feel comfortable flying the airplane. Quite unprecedented kind of thing. But what this is really showing is that, once again, Air Force generals are placing hardware, money, and contractors ahead of the lives of pilots. And that's really what those two pilots were complaining about when they stepped forward to 60 Minutes. Needless to say, they didn't put it the way I did and would never do so.
Again, I'm speaking with Pierre Spray, who's a primary designer on two key Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet. Now, just separating out the oxygen problem from the poisoning problem that both affects F-22 pilots and ground crew, I mean, aircraft have been flying on oxygen, or pilots have been using oxygen since the 1930s. This is an old and tried and true technology. What's the problem here? Why? What's the shift that's taken place? You mentioned it's also the F-18 has a similar system
right to
the F-22. What happened there? Why did they switch from a tried and true method of providing oxygen to the pilots to whatever this new method is?
For the reason that lots of wonderful new technological gadgets are tried. The underlying reason, of course, is the new gadgets are more expensive and the contractors make more money. Of course, there are always other excuses forwarded when you have a tried and true technology replaced by something more complicated and more expensive. In this case, the excuse is always the logisticians in the case of the Navy on board the carriers, in the case of the Air Force at air bases, they don't like dealing with liquid oxygen. You know, it's a pain in the butt, which is probably true, by the way. It is a pain in the butt. But, I mean, it's a pain in the butt we've been dealing with since the 30s, and we've had pretty reliable results. We've replaced it with a more expensive, less reliable system that yields at least four times the rate of problems with pilots, including fatalities. By the way, the Navy killed two pilots with this same oxygen-generating system on board the airplane. So they're, in a sense, guilty of the same thing as the Air Force.
So this is
that hasn't stopped anybody.
Right.
The obvious reaction to all of this is rip the oxygen-generating systems out of the airplane and go back to oxygen bottles. I mean, imagine if hospitals took this approach. You know, hospitals use liquid oxygen for patients with heart conditions and all that for at least an equally long time and with very thoroughly reliable results. Imagine if they decided, well, you know, oxygen is a pain in the butt, and we have this other thing that some famous medical device supplier is making, which is a little oxygen factory that we can install, and, well, it might kill four times as many patients as the old system does, but, you know, at least we don't have the pain in the butt of dealing with oxygen bottles. Imagine if hospitals took that approach.
Well, Pierre Spray, this is what they call, in terms of Pentagon procurement, gold plating, where
gold plating to the max.
Where contractors have, instead of using the Timex approach, they use the Rolex approach. So, and, you know, the long and the short of it is that these patriots that we have in the Congress, particularly on the Republican side, have just basically refused to cut any defense spending. They're throwing money at the Pentagon at a time when they're expecting people to take a hit, American people to take a hit on their Medicare and their Social Security. There's no advocates for anything but this kind of reckless profligacy. But what really burns me up is that all of these Congress people who are writing the checks to these contractors who are putting the lives of the pilots in jeopardy while they make profits, they're the ones that keep talking about how we stand up for our boys and girls in uniform and nothing's too good for them and all this garbage.
Right, exactly. The usual phony patriot story, which I'm sad is equally distributed between Democrats and Republicans.
Well, of course, that's the whole sad story of the military-industrial complex.
It's a
bipartisan boondoggle.
Right.
But do you think that given what happened on 60 Minutes, which has a pretty big listenership, and the fact that they didn't discipline these two pilots, and by the way, in the piece, the Air Force general in charge couldn't answer the problems. I mean, he said, yes, there's a problem, but yes, we've also we've ungrounded the aircraft and the pilots are flying it, and we still don't know what's wrong.
Right, and he feels the risk is acceptable to pilots, you know, is what he said. And of course, it's not. It's unacceptable. It's ridiculous to be flying this airplane that we don't need in the first place and risking pilots.
Well, explain why we don't need it in the first place. And by the way, what is the unit cost on this aircraft?
This airplane is slowly coming to fulfill my prophecy of being the first $500 million fighter in history. But in actuality, right now, official numbers put it at $412 million per airplane. So we're not quite at $500 million, but with the fixes that are coming in and the further work that needs to be done to fix things that were wrong on the production line, it's guaranteed it will hit $500 million.
But there's a huge... let me just do a reality check here, Pierre Spray. Again, the designer of two key Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet. $500 million a copy, and also the enormous expense of training pilots. And yet the Air Force is prepared to put these aircraft at $500 million a pop in jeopardy, and the lives of their pilots. For what reason? Because they're just embarrassed that they don't know what's wrong with this plane? And well, that, I mean, it...
It goes a little deeper than that. Of course, it's a huge embarrassment for the Air Force. They've been defending this airplane. They howled when Secretary Gates decided to stick with the original program as proposed and end the production at 185 airplanes, which was the official program at the time. The Air Force howled. They wanted to keep on going for hundreds more. So, of course, they're saving themselves embarrassment, but most importantly, they're keeping the smooth flow of money going to Lockheed Martin, because quite a number of them expect to have very handsome vice presidential jobs there when they retire.
So this is just, there's a word for this, you know, it's called corruption.
Exactly, exactly. And unfortunately, you know, our fighting men and women and sailors, soldiers, pilots are all the victims of corruption. They will be forced to use inadequate weapons, too expensive, too few of them in any future war, in order to satisfy the fact that high-ranking officers like to have good retirement jobs.
But again, I can't get over the fact that these are $500 million a copy, and it's cost the taxpayers millions to train these pilots, and they're trained to have the best reflexes, to be incredibly skillful and able to fly these high-tech platforms, and yet they can't fix the oxygen, which turns their brain into, you know, mush. I mean, it's, you know, what's the point of having all of that hardware and all of that skill in the pilot if you can't supply the oxygen that keeps the pilot alert? And then you've already lost a $500 million aircraft up in Alaska.
Right, exactly. Well, I mean, the sad thing is, in a larger sense, is you have a $500 million airplane that's nowhere near as good as earlier airplanes. You know, all this gold plating has resulted in an airplane of deficient maneuverability, grossly inadequate endurance, unable to outmaneuver, you know, a good 1980s fighter, and we're paying $500 million for this. And even worse, perhaps the worst single aspect, since you raised the question of these highly skilled pilots, and unfortunately, they're nowhere near as skilled as they need to be, because this airplane is so complicated that you can only fly it about 10 to 12 hours a month, which amounts to maybe ten times a month. And the pilots are getting hopelessly inadequate training because the airplane can't be flown on often enough because it's a hangar queen, because they're constantly fixing complex electronics and particularly stealth coatings that constantly need maintenance. So the pilots, like the pilot who crashed and died in Alaska, he was one of the best sticks in the entire F-22 force. He was a really first-rate pilot. And in the accident report, they said he was fully qualified because he had been getting between 8 and 10 hours a month of flying for the past 6 months. I can't tell you what an inadequate amount of flying that is. That's the kind of flying that's not adequate in the Polish or the Russian Air Force. You know, it's so little. And remember now, in combat, nothing counts more than the pilot. You know, if it's talking about whether you win or lose, it's far more important to have a highly skilled pilot than to have the very latest airplane. Pilots always dominate the outcome of combat.
Sure, but
here we've bought a $500 million airplane that can't possibly train pilots adequately.
But the plane itself, is you've listed the deficiencies of the plane, but it's just surreal to think that at the end of the day, this highly skilled pilot is not getting enough oxygen to his brain.
Well, I mean, it may not be enough. It may be worse than not enough oxygen.
He's also getting poisoned, right?
He's being poisoned by the airplane. There's a very good chance that, in fact, what's really happening on this airplane that's causing this enormously higher rate of incidents of pilot, you know, malfunction incidents than even in the F-18 is not just oxygen deficiency, but a much larger portion of these incidents are almost certainly due to something that's present on the F-22 and not present on the F-18. Mind you, this is not proven, but quite likely, and that is the presence of stealth coatings.
Right, that's
the F-18 is a non-stealth airplane. The F-22 is a stealth airplane. That means most of the skin of the airplane is composed of laminates, very similar to fiberglass, and glued together with extremely toxic glues. There have been problems even on the production line with the toxicity of these glues and workers getting sick. Now you have the same glue on an airplane, and in the presence of the heat of the engine, you can imagine how much of those fumes are being off-gassed due to a much warmer environment.
Well, just in closing, Pierre Spray, again, the primary designer of two key Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet, you mentioned the stealth technology itself being, you didn't say it's a hoax.
It is a hoax.
But
it is a hoax. Promoting it as being the secret to winning air combat is simply a hoax, because it does not make the airplane invisible. There are thousands of radars in the world, and radars currently being actively sold by the Russians that see right through all the stealth technology, and nobody is saying that in public.
And to maintain this stealth technology, people are being poisoned. It's very expensive.
Right.
And the long and the short of it is that if you fly a stealth plane like a B-2 through a rainstorm, doesn't the coating gets diminished?
Exactly, and that's exactly why half the maintenance is occupied with fixing the stealth, because every time you fly through a rainstorm or a dust storm, the coating gets disrupted. Then when you land, you have to reapply all these laminates and all these glues, and now you're exposed to fresh fumes again. That's exactly what I was saying.
And a lot of countries, like, for example, the Iranians would have, because the theory about an attack on Iran, you know, which, of course, we know that this has been discussed a lot, and there's a lot of speculation that Netanyahu has been pushing for some time to force the Americans into some kind of an attack, or they will attack Iran, and then we'll have to clean up their mess. That's one of the scenarios. My understanding, having talked to some people in the Pentagon at the assistant secretary level, they said that the reason that the Israelis want to get the Americans in on this war is that they don't have the bunker buster bombs that the U.S. has, and this special Air Force bunker buster bomb can only be carried by a B-2 bomber. So just let's go through that scenario. If after the election the U.S. and the Israelis attack Iran, you're saying that the Iranians could shoot down a B-2 bomber?
Sure. Sure. If they've bought, which I don't know, I'm not familiar with their present radar inventory, but if they've bought the standard Russian long-wavelength radar, they'll know when B-2s are coming, and they can prepare for it. The B-2 is really slow, a really slow airplane. They can scramble fighters, and it would be a piece of cake to shoot down B-2s.
Well, I thank you for joining us here today, Pierre Spray.
Very good. I enjoyed it, Ian, as usual. We always have a lively conversation.
Well, yeah, albeit depressing for the taxpayers, for the pilots. It's just an absolute scandal. I thank you again for joining us.
Very good, Ian.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Again, I've been speaking with Pierre Spray, who's a veteran high-tech defense weapons and systems designer, as well as a highly regarded producer of avant-garde jazz and other genre recordings. Pierre Spray was the primary designer of two key Air Force warplanes, the F-16 fighter and the A-10 ground attack jet. He left the Pentagon in 1986 and went on to found Maple Shade Records. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Farhan Mohammed. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.
Disappeared by half.